Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Sunday to you, boys and girls. So glad you're with us. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
Hey, that's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. We appreciate it on a fine Sunday. Damon Amendolari, usually you can catch us on weekday mornings, Monday through Friday here on CBS Sports Radio, 6 until 10 a.m. Eastern time, but also Sundays these days, 1 until 4 Eastern. Coming up in 20 minutes, a fascinating profile done by Joel Sherman of the New York Post about Greg Jeffries, the one-time would-be shoe-in superstar who never ended up really becoming the star that he should have been. He was totally a superstar in the making. He was a prodigy. He came up with the Mets, 87, 88, and he was phenomenal as a young hitter. But he took all sorts of abuse from veterans on that team inside that clubhouse, and they looked at him as overly protected. They looked at him as a baby, as soft, as too intellectual, as high maintenance, as a diva. And it ends up that in retrospect, a lot of the things that Greg Jeffries, they interpreted as diva tendencies, were just way ahead of their time. And in retrospect, a lot of those guys that made his life a living hell and basically ran him out of town inside that locker room, inside the clubhouse, now realize the error of their ways. And in this piece, it's about both sides making peace. You know, Greg Jeffries had a fine career. He ended up going to the Royals and then had a couple of all-star bids with the Cardinals. But he never was the superstar prodigy that he looked to be in the late 80s when he adorned covers of all types of baseball magazines and was atop the prospect list for baseball. A really, really interesting story to me for any baseball fan about this transition that happened, the evolution in the 80s to the 90s towards modern baseball, and how the old school just really took their abuse out on guys that were coming up. And Jeffries was that type of guy. So I want to talk about that piece coming up here on the show in about 15 minutes from now. Also, a little bit later on in the episode, later on in the hour, we've got your epic fail as well. But talking a lot about the 4th and 15 proposal in the NFL, that's going to go in front of the competition committee this upcoming week. And what it would mean is that instead of an onside kick, you would have a 4th and 15 play. If you watched the Alliance or the XFL the last couple of years, if you didn't, I don't blame you. If you blinked, you missed both of those leagues. But they both had this rule where instead of an onside kick, you had 4th and 15 from your own 25. And so if you convert this one play, essentially get it past the 40, then you retain possession, fresh set of downs. If you don't, the opposing team gets it right there. So that's the onside kick is essentially a 15-yard play you got to get. And the reason is that the NFL has tried to basically strip the kick away, the kickoff away. They've moved up where you kick it off from, so it's now more out of the back of the end zone, more touchbacks. And the onside kick, you can't overload one side. They're trying to make that play safer, and there's some people that believe we'll never see a kickoff again in the future in the NFL. So this is another step in that direction. I actually like this because it's so hard to get the onside kick. It's a 6% crack at it these days, down from 20% before the rules changes the last 2 years. So one from 20%, one out of every five, you can get the onside kick. Now down to 6%. I mean, look, if you're kicking it, that if you're kicking it 100 times, you get them 5 or 6 times out of 100, you're never getting it. So I don't even understand why, you know, we would have that still in the NFL. Figured a better way to do it. And if you're trying to eliminate the kick because of safety rules, I think the 4th and 15 makes a lot of sense. I think it's cool. And look, if your defense can't stop 15 yards, I mean, that is a problem. On one down, 15 yards, that is an issue. So I like it, but it sounds like there's a lot of you guys that don't like it at all. So we're taking your feedback on this at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Or on Twitter, follow me and tweet at me, DA on CBS. John is in Atlanta here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, John?
Hey, so one quick question and then a quick thought on the 4th and 15 as well. You mentioned earlier in the show the Chiefs converted 12 out of 16, I believe, on 3rd and 15 or longer.
Right.
How many of those conversions were due to penalties and automatic first downs?
Good question. I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
Okay. And then my next thought on it kind of goes hand in hand with that question. For the 4th and 15, I like the idea so long as it's a clean play. You should still have to earn it. So my thought would be add that if there's any offensive penalty, you know, pre-snap or otherwise, it's an automatic turnover on downs. The other team gets the ball. You can't commit a penalty. And then if it's defensive that would result in an automatic first down, it becomes an extra point distance. Make it a 4th and 2. And they still have to earn it that way. That would be my only suggestion.
Not bad. Not bad alterations. I appreciate the feedback, John. I see what you're saying. You don't want the officials on 4th and 15, as we've seen the refs ruin so many big moments in the NFL the last couple of years, be the reasons why you would convert on an onside kick. I totally understand that. Or be the reason you convert on a 4th down. And, yeah, that's a fair point. Like, defensive holding, which is an automatic first down despite it only being a 5-yard penalty, should not result in a first down in 4th and 15. It just shouldn't. Not in this case. So maybe there's a way to alter it that way. I don't know what their specific regulations around employing this is going to be, but I would agree. And wanting the team to actually earn it instead of just getting a flag, I agree. And instead of the offense on 4th and 15 having a 5-yard off a false start, making it 4th and 20, maybe that just negates the play altogether. That's fair as well. I see what you're saying on that. Overall, I like it, but I do think it could be tweaked in that way. David's in Dallas here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Dave?
Hey, DA. The last caller kind of took the words out of my mouth regarding the penalty thing, because the first thing I thought is, how many times do you see where a team has a 3rd and 17 or something like that? All you got to do is throw the ball downfield pretty much. Whoops, okay, automatic first down, half distance to go. Here we are, 1st and 10 at the 15. Because here's a scenario I was thinking about. Imagine the Cowboys and Eagles near the end of the season. Score 17-16, whichever one you want to go with. Let's just say, for example, it's Philly. So Dallas scores, and now they're up by one. Okay, so you would have to probably go ahead and send the ball back to Philly, give them a chance. Yeah, but in this scenario, you could run the ball, which is fine, and run out the time where you don't have time to come back. And I see that being a huge issue. It kind of almost reminds me of the overtime rule going back to the Saints Vikings where Brett Favre didn't get another chance. Can you imagine how many people would be raising hell? Oh, so-and-so didn't get a chance. Or imagine if it was Aaron Rodgers or Brady or somebody.
Well, David, if you're asking me if this could slant towards the team with the best offense just keeping the ball and playing keep away, I see your point. And I mentioned that stat before that the Chiefs last year had 16 attempts at 3rd and 15 or more and converted 12 of them, which is just mind-boggling. But that's the Chiefs. That's Patrick Mahomes. That's not the norm. But on 4th and 15, if you want to keep the ball after a possession to not give the ball back because you're worried about your defense, you can't run the football on 4th and 15. You're never going to convert that. So 4th and 15 is still a big challenge, and if you don't get it, the opposing team gets it where you've been stopped. So they get it deep in your own territory. You know, let's just say it's a 4th and 15 and you lead by 3. You don't want to give the football back because it's been a shootout. It's that Rams and Chiefs game from last year or 2 years ago, 51-45 or 51-48. You don't want to give the ball back because you're scared that your defense is going to get cut up like Swiss cheese. On 4th and 15, you get 10 yards. You don't convert. That's not a first down. And now the Rams take over, the Chiefs take over from your 35-yard line. So now they're already in scoring position. There is a big risk in doing it. I don't think it's fair to say, well, you'll just chuck it up and get a penalty because, I mean, let's face it. Are there a lot of flags thrown? Yes. But on 3rd and 15s, it's not like every team just chucks it up down the field and hopes to get a penalty and always gets it. And number two, if you're trying to play keep away, you still got to convert a 15-yard fourth down. I mean, that's not necessarily the easy conversion. And the risk is if you don't get it, you're giving the opponent back the football deep in your own territory. Todd is in Tampa Bay here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Todd?
Good to talk to you. I hope all the sports shows let everybody talk about their team for 30 seconds to see what we got. We got our Buccaneers here, and no, I'm not buying the drinking the Kool-Aid, okay? Our defense can't stop anybody. Our field goal kicker can't kick a field goal, and our offense, no. And by the way, Jameis had given us the lead in the fourth quarter many a time for our defense and our special teams to give up the booty. So don't diss Jameis over here. And let me say something. No, you're telling me as a head coach. Now, I'm a head coach. Let's say I'm the head coach of the Buccaneers and you're my assistant coach or defensive coordinator and I'm getting $7 million a year coaching and you're getting $1 million a year as my assistant coach and we're beating a team and my Buccaneers are beating the Saints 21-0 and then Drew Brees gets hot, it's 21-14 and now he scores a late touchdown and now I got to give him possession of the ball in 4th and 15 instead of my offense, but I'll take my 3% chance and I want the ball back and I'll take a knee and run out the clock. No, forget about it. You got 60 minutes to get back in the game.
All right, Todd, but let me put the shoe on the other foot here. You're down 21 to the Saints. Suddenly Tom Brady gets hot. Now it's 21-14, and instead of taking a 3% or 5% shot of the onside kick, you have Tom Brady and Gronk and those great wide receivers with a 4th and 15. Don't you feel better about your chances?
No, Tom Brady don't deserve that. Tom Brady gave two touchdowns for Belichick and the Patriots. It was the defense who gave up the booty both times. Tom Brady drove him down there. He'd have the other two titles.
Okay, well, whatever quarterback you want to put Jameis Winston in that spot, put Jameis Winston in that spot. But if you're rooting for the Buccaneers and they're coming back, wouldn't you rather have 4th and 15 to try to convert instead of trying to get the onside kick?
I don't want the onside kick. I want you to win. I want tie it in overtime and go to overtime and let Tebow throw an 80-yard strike like he did and end the doggone thing. Who should be in the pros, by the way, too, who won 6 games in a row like no other quarterback. You're talking about a disgrace. That's a disgrace.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Todd. Once we got into Tim Tebow takes, I think we can end that phone call real quick. Okay, Todd. All right. Settle down now. We were under the impression that in 2020, May of 2020, we were not going to have to go down the road of Tim Tebow takes. But thanks so much for the phone call. You know, this time during Sundays in football season is something called the witching hour, where the final hour of the early game window has a lot of lead changes and big points and crazy things happen. It's called the witching hour. We here on the DA show call it the switching hour. Cue the music.
On Sundays throughout the fall, this is the witching hour.
Between 3 o'clock and 4:30 in the 1 o'clock games is the witching hour. So don't bother me in the witching hour, okay?
Today, it's the switching hour.
3 to 4 is the best time.
All right, Mraz, start us off here. Take something in sports that you want to switch. What do you got?
Well, D.A., high school Mraz would kick adult Mraz's ass right now if he knew that two straight weekends on Saturday and Sunday, I can't get enough watching Bundesliga soccer. I need it. It's now become a fix for me.
You need it.
D.A., I woke up. I got into it. Yesterday, I had to remind myself that it was on. Tuned it on. I'm like, okay, this is pretty good. I'm into it. Today, I woke up. It was the first thing I had to do was get to the TV, turn it on, and it just gives me a little of that vein-pumping sports I'm looking for. But I have to be honest. I was stuck in a trance today. Little blueberry muffin, little orange juice, feed up, kid crying next to me. And I'm watching this soccer game for a good 15 minutes, D.A., before I have to remind myself, wait a minute. There's no fans, right? Are you sure there's no fans? Because FS1 or the stadium itself pumped in actual crowd noise. And not only did they pump it in like it was humming along the whole time, there was chanting. There was songs. It gave you that soccer feel. And when there were goals, the crowd went nuts. And it felt like, honestly, because you couldn't see any shots, obviously, with the camera, a tight shot on the field, a little bit of the advertising in the stands, but that crowd noise humming and elevating at big moments when you would be elevating on your couch made me realize that for the switching hour, DA, not only when Joe Buck made that reference about football and having crowd noise pumped in that we debate it, not only should football do it, not only should hockey do it, basketball do it, they need to do it. Because if somebody like me, who is true and true, diehard, watches everything, can get fooled for 15 minutes into thinking there's a crowd, that's pretty damn good technology to me, and that is going to elevate these sports on the television on a whole new level while we go through this without fans. We need this, DA.
That was done by the broadcast team. That was a technical engineer on the telecast that was pumping in that crowd noise and kind of riding it depending on what team was scoring or making a big play or whatever. And I agree. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It wasn't overboard. You know, it didn't feel like, making it sound like it's a World Cup game, and instead it's just a middle-of-the-season Bundesliga game, but it sounded like there was some juice in the crowd, and it wasn't overdone. It was done really well. The other thing that they did was they covered up the lower bowl with signage, some advertising, and some stuff about the league, and so for most of the telecast, you could not tell that there were no fans of the stands because it sounded and at least kind of looked like there were things in the stands, advertisement, signage, and you heard it. It looked really good. I would say unless it was a field shot of a corner kick or a free kick from the goalie, it was perfect. I mean, it looked like real soccer. So I'm with you. I watched this morning and said, this is now how it's going to have to look. And I saw a lot of run from NHL people in the NHL media saying when hockey comes back, this should be what we do. Signage around the rink so you can't quite see there's no fans around the glass, and then pump in some crowd noise.
I loved it. I can't get enough. I'm all in. Get me to next weekend.
So I am going to take my switch this week and say on sports Twitter, can we have a quota of how many times you can argue? Because to me, I wish that sports Twitter was less about just dumping all over each other. You know, there. Of course, today's discourse in politics and certainly on social media is basically, you suck, you're an idiot. No, you suck, you're an idiot. No, really, you suck even worse, you're an idiot. And then the comments supporting who sucks worse and who's the bigger idiot. And it is so exhausting. And Mraz, you engage in this quite a bit.
I feel like this is targeted at me.
It's not necessarily you, but you are a repeat offender of this. And I just go on Twitter and I'm like, I like the people that give me stats that I haven't thought about or seen. Like, that's where I got the Chiefs stat of 12 of 16 from 3rd and 15 or more this year, which is just mind-blowing. I like that. I like when people post interesting video clips. I like when people post interesting news articles. What I don't like is a never-ending barrage of people telling other people how much they suck and that they're wrong on their take. And I realize that sports is about debate, but I just think you should have a quota. Like, if all I did for 3 hours on Sundays and 4 hours every day on Monday through Friday is argue with everybody or just tell everybody that they suck, or have people call in and just argue for 4 hours, it would be a really bad radio show. But that is what Twitter is distilled down into. So I think you got to pick your spot. So, like, if you have a ridicule or a trash or a you suck type tweet, fine, you're allowed to. I don't want to kill free speech, but you know, you get a quota. So you have like 10 of those a month. okay, or five of those a week or something like that.
I used 10 yesterday, D.A.
Yeah, I know.
With Mike Freeman.
I know. You and Mike Freeman can't stop dumping all over one another. I'm like, I don't need this the whole day.
He called me Squirt. I can't come back to that after the fact.
Well, you can come back, but then I don't want to see you trashing somebody else tomorrow and then two other people on Tuesday and then five other people on Friday. You know, you got to use them. You got to use them with some discretion here. And Mike Freeman can call you a squirt, but then he can't dump all over you five more times in the day, okay?
That's fair. That's fair.
So you got to pick and choose your spots. You got to pick and choose your spots because it can be never ending. I mean, really, that's all anybody wants to do now. And I'm like, can we give it a rest for a moment here? So that's what I would switch.
All right. Fair. I apologize.
Use your trashes wisely. Use your dumping on somebody wisely. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, as I mentioned, this really fascinating Greg Jeffries piece that was done about a future star that never was and how he really got crushed by the old guard and now they realize they were wrong. I want to talk about that because it's a really great piece for any sports fan about this intersection between old guard and new guard. Then also, a lot of you guys want to keep weighing in on this 4th and 15 proposal, whether you like it or not. Sounds like a lot of you guys do not like it. DA, Damon Amendolara, here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Hey, good morning, DA. First of all, I want to pay you a compliment. I think you're the best thing in sports radio. You're so informative, and I get something out of your show every morning.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You can catch us mornings, weekday mornings, 6 until 10 Eastern time, right here on CBS Sports Radio. Hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on Sirius XM, channel 206, and you can listen to us as well on your phone. Use the CBS Sports app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. We thank you for being with us. Damon Amendolara with you. We're talking about this 4th and 15 rule. This week, the NFL Competition Committee going to vote on 4th and 15, whether instead of the onside kick, they should replace it with one down to get 15 yards from your own 25-yard line. I like it. Sounds like most of you don't like it. But I also want to touch on this piece that Joel Sherman did in the New York Post today. If you are a baseball fan of the 80s, 90s, or even 2000s, you remember Greg Jeffries. Because Jeffries ended up playing for more than a decade and made a couple of All-Star games with the St. Louis Cardinals. However, he was never the player that he was touted to be. He was the first ever minor league baseball player of the year, two-time baseball prospect of the year. And he was touted by just about every scouting service as the next superstar, and many still insist that he had Hall of Fame tools. He did not have a Hall of Fame career, only two All-Star games. But when he came up in the late 80s with the Mets, he was a phenomenon. In the call-up in 88, in the final 2 months of the season, hit over 300, and the Mets were a machine at that point in time. And full disclosure, I'm a huge New York Mets fan, and those were the teams of my youth. Greg Jeffries was just earmarked to be the next great superstar and one of the core focal points of the Mets going into the 90s. And it never happened. And people kind of wonder why, because he was looked at as soft or a diva. There was a letter that he supposedly penned that was read on WFAN, Sports Talk Radio in New York, about laying off his case, that he is the victim, and that everybody's too hard on him, and it just made him look even worse. And, you know, in New York, you can't say, please treat me better. I'm having it so hard. Be nice to me. That is not gonna cut the mustard in New York. So he was basically run out of town in 91. They traded him away. He had a couple of good years with the Cardinals, but he was never really what people expected. And most of it was seen as that locker room couldn't stand him. They openly bagged on him. They openly told the media that this kid needs to grow up and he needs to be better. And they bagged on him and they trashed him. And it was a lot of tough love and he did not handle it well. Greg Jeffries was reached for comment about all of what happened by Joel Sherman of the New York Post, longtime baseball writer. Jeffries said, quote, I really like those guys. They were my teammates. I like them. I hope that message gets across. I felt I did more wrong than them. There is no ill will. I hope they know it. If you could, please tell them that. Which is a crazy turn of events, because you would imagine that he would be really bitter and really angry that they treated him like they did, and that ultimately, you know, he was treated unfairly. Jeffrey said, quote, "It wasn't their fault. They were veterans. I can't look back at New York as a negative. Let them know they made me into a man. They don't need my stamp of approval. I appreciate the tough love. It made me tougher and a better player, but maybe I didn't show my appreciation to them." Which, again, is crazy, because if you asked anybody that knew the Greg Jeffrey story, if you would have said, well, how do you think he feels? Nobody would say, oh, man, he's appreciative of it. He wants those guys to know that he thinks he was in the wrong. What? Because the way that Greg Jeffries went about his career was he had a father that appeared to be really overprotective. He had his bats that nobody else could touch. He was a guy that seemed to be consumed by the numbers, the stats. He was a guy that the veterans thought was treated with kid gloves by management and the manager. And he didn't fit in, and they didn't like him, and that he was a young kid and he needed to understand the ways of old school baseball. And it wasn't about him. It was about the old guys, and he had to cut his teeth and prove it, and he had to go through the hazing. And what Joel Sherman did in this piece was he reached out to a number of members of that team: Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, David Cone, Roger McDowell. And all of those guys go, "We were wrong. We were wrong." Darling said he was revolutionary. The archaic Neanderthal part of baseball was not ready to accept that. A lot of animosity came from players not willing to grow and change. He was not allowed to thrive in the way that he should have. In retrospect, it was a black mark on our team. And it's pretty interesting to go back and look at this, because was Jeffries the toast of the town before he really accomplished much? Yeah. But also, this was the beginning of a different, this was the end of a different era for baseball. Soon in the 90s and certainly the 2000s, if you had a young prospect, you put him into the lineup, and you let him struggle, and that's okay. And that the veterans had to realize, you know what? He's here to ultimately make the team better, and you're on the decline, and you have to accept that. And I think players, you know, when they look at Juan Soto, of course Juan Soto's amazing, but I don't think there's a resentment that he got his shot at 19 years old. It is a, yeah, this is the way the baseball works. When you have guys that are protective of their equipment, their bats, and say, no, I need this for this instance. I need this for this situation. Everybody has their own tools now. They're all independent contractors. When you have a young man that has a tightly knit group around him, like a father that's saying, hey, you should do this, go back to this. You know, nowadays, that's part and parcel of all of these guys that have grown up running with travel teams and doing this and doing that and having their dad or their parents or some close inner circle having coached them the entire way. I mean, that's kind of the norm these days. And for a guy, for a kid who was all about getting on base and playing multiple positions and trying to be able to draw a walk, fine. You know, it was sabermetrics. It was Moneyball, if you will, that he was doing. And it wasn't the old school way of doing it and looking at your numbers and crunching film and looking at stats. And Jeffries did all that. Now, Jeffries, I think, was emotionally immature and might have been overly protected by his family and maybe wasn't ready for a group of guys in that Mets locker room that was, they were renegades, they were outlaws, and they were tight-knit, and they were hard. Hard, hard locker room, hard clubhouse to grow up in. But what he did then was the start of what would be widely accepted in the 90s and 2000s. And I thought it was so interesting when Jeffries in this piece said, you know, that was just the era. It wasn't their job to coddle me. They had enough on their plate. You don't think Keith and Strawberry and Gary Carter had pressure? They were the face of New York. They had their own issues. I needed to take care of me. I had to learn as I was playing. And he said, I was wrong. I had to be better. I thought this was a really amazing piece. And if you were a fan of baseball in the 80s, Greg Jeffries was always one of the great what-ifs, but also a sign that, you know, people can really grow and grow up and gain perspective and be the bigger person. And Greg pretty much was that. And a pretty unpredictable ending to the Greg Jeffries story, where you would think that all those guys still hated him and he hated them. Not the case. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. If you want to read that article, New York Post Online has it, nypost.com. Really interesting. Sully is in New York here on CBS Sports Radio. Sully, what's going on?
Hey, DA. Thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure.
Listen, first of all, that's what separates the Joel Shermans, the Vaccaros, the Mike Lupicas from a lot of the other reporters. Not to say that the other reporters aren't good, but these guys not only report, but they give you a story. I mean, that story today was compelling.
Really was.
This is my takeaway from it. If you compare or parallel Jeffries and his father, yeah, they were revolutionary. They were out in front of the curve. But you can see the parallel to Bryce Harper and his dad. Bryce Harper is 15, was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yep.
And he finished, he basically did GED in high school after his junior year so he could go to college at 16 or 17 so he'd be able to be drafted. And he knew he was going to, you know, Boris's guy, he was going to be number one or two. And he was one the year after Strasburg. And it was a great move by Boris, money-wise, by doing that. But by doing that, you see that he's sort of like, not coddled, but he's protected. And in a bubble created by his father.
Totally. Yep,
and,
totally.
And his father is looking to benefit him. I'm not knocking Jeffrey's father or the other guy's, but Harper's father. But they, when I grew up, a kid in Brooklyn, you play stickball, you know, on the street. I'm going dating myself, but there was nobody there, you know, when you screwed up and everybody started ragging you, you know, you get a bloody nose here or there. But there was none of that. So you learned how to put up, and you learned, and like Sherman said, you learned how to read social things. Like you could get a look from a veteran in the clubhouse and realize, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do this, maybe I shouldn't do that, maybe I should be bouncing the bat. And you lose that. And I think as much as the guys being jerks, and they were jerks in the clubhouse for the way they treated a possible asset to their team, he was unprepared to become one of the guys, and he only learned that, to his credit, when he got older in his 30s, 40s. Now he's 52 years old, and he's apologizing to them because there was failure on his part also.
But I think that's all really astute observations. I think you're right, Sully. I think you're reading it exactly right, and I think that comparison to Bryce Harper is a good one, and it just shows that sports changed and Major League Baseball changed dramatically between 1987, 1988, and 2012 when Bryce Harper made his debut. That was a period that is completely different. And the difference is exactly as you said. Now it is so common for parents to be so tightly interwoven with their kids' athletic career. And, you know, what ended up happening was basically Greg Jeffries was helicopter parented. He was essentially probably siphoned off from the rest of his peers. And so when your best friend is your parent, or you don't really intermingle with the other kids, you don't know how to handle being thrown into a clubhouse like that where there might be some resentment. And certainly even a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old that is used to dealing with players his age is probably not ready to deal with somebody in his 30s just quite yet if that person is his teammate, quote-unquote, but applying some major pressure, and there's like 5 or 10 of those guys that are in their 30s. I mean, I think it was a perfect storm, but everything that you said is absolutely right on, and sports just changed. It changed in that time. Late 80s, you are looked at as a liability because you're not a guy's guy, and you're too close to your dad, and you're overly protected, and now it is much different. It is much more accepted. It is much more understood. And Jeffries just happened to be in the wrong era. And also by being so tight probably or protected by his family and his parents, he was not ready to be just a regular guy. I mean, let's face it, there were young guys on the team that did just fine. Straw and Gooden come up and they're just fine. And young players, Kevin Mitchell, he's just fine. Kevin Elster, he's just fine. Those are young players on the team that adjusted relatively quickly and well. Now, ultimately, Straw and Gooden were undone by their drug abuse problems, so they didn't do all that well, obviously, in the long term, but in terms of being accepted by the locker room. But all of that is right on, and it's a fascinating case study in how sports has changed. The story of Greg Jeffries in the New York Post today. When we come back here on the show, we've got your epic fail and continuing to take your phone calls on 4th and 15, whether you like the idea of that instead of the onside kick that's going to go in front of the NFL competition committee this week. Damon Amendolar, a DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
DA, my man, how are you? First off, I just want to thank you, Mraz, the body, Bogus, for being a big part of my work week, man, because you guys sure make the mornings fly by, and I appreciate that.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Catch us tomorrow morning and throughout the work week, 6 until 10 Eastern time. CBS Sports Radio, the DA Show, Damon Amendolar with you. And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit to car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Robin Topeka tweets, holy cow, that dude from Tampa had an issue. That may have been Hurricane Jen's boyfriend. Travis tweets, Tebow? Tebow? Tebow! Yes, we took a phone call earlier from a very jumpy gentleman in the Tampa Bay area who is not for 4th and 15 and wanted to set the record straight on Tim Tebow as a quarterback of the NFL. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Good to talk to you. Good to talk to you. I hope all the sports shows let everybody talk about their team for 30 seconds to see what we got. We got our Buccaneers here. And no, I'm not buying the coup, drinking the Kool-Aid, okay?
2.5, 3.5.
Our defense can't stop anybody. Our field goal kicker can't kick a field goal. And our offense, no. And by the way, Jameis had given us the lead in the fourth quarter many a time for our defense and our special teams to give up the booty. So don't diss Jameis over here. And let me say something. No. You're telling me as a head coach. Now, I'm a head coach. Let's say I'm the head coach of the Buccaneers, and you're my assistant coach.
82 on 55.
Coach or defensive coordinator, and you're getting, I'm getting $7 million a year coaching, and you're getting $1 million a year as my assistant coach, and we're beating a team.
30, not ball, not one ball, not 30.
My Buccaneers are beating the Saints 21-0, and then Drew Brees gets hot. It's 21-14, and now he scores a late touchdown, and now I got to give him my possession of the ball. And 4th and 15 instead of my offense, but my I'll take my 3% chance, and I want the ball back, and I'll take a knee and run out the clock. No, forget about it. You got 60 minutes to get back in the game.
All right, Todd, but let me put the shoe on the other foot here. You're down 21 to the Saints. Suddenly Tom Brady gets hot. Now it's 21-14. And instead of taking a 3% or 5% shot of the onside kick, you have Tom Brady and Gronk and those great wide receivers with a 4th and 15. Don't you feel better about your chances?
No, Tom Brady don't deserve that. Tom Brady gave two touchdowns for Belichick. And the Patriots. It was the defense who gave up the booty both times. Tom Brady drove him down there. He'd have the other two titles.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
He also ended that phone call by talking about how Tim Tebow should still be a quarterback in the NFL. So. I also like the idea of a Buccaneers fan talking about the booty.
Yeah.
Twice. That was kind of on brand, right?
Defense good. Always gives up the booty in Tampa, DA. Oh.
Yeah. Signed Mons Venus. Mitch is in New Jersey here on CBS Sports Radio. Mitch, what do you think about the 4th and 15 idea?
How's it going, D? Good show.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for working on the weekends, too.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I mean, if you got a great quarterback – you score a touchdown, you want to go, you take your chances, and then your defense can stop, you can run up the score. And I agree with you, the safety, they're talking about they want to do this for safety. Then why are you having 17 games? Eliminate the overtime. There are too many preseason games, and there are too many gimmicks. I like some of the old-style football. Onside kick, it's a dare, it's a challenge. You just have to work on it. Maybe it's better to be lucky than good. I don't want to see that. It's too many gimmicks.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Well, remember, by going to the 17-game schedule, they are eliminating preseason games. So that is part of this. Look, I think that talking about safety for the NFL and then going to a 17-game schedule, yes, it sounds completely hypocritical. And the NFL oftentimes loses a lot of credibility in the safety aspect because they let some things go. They push for more games. They push for games internationally. And then they suddenly go, oh, but we can't have the kickoff or the onside kick because that's too dangerous. I completely agree with that. But if you're just asking me what play I would rather see in an NFL game, the onside kick gets recovered so infrequently now. It's at 6% over the last two seasons. So you got a 6 out of 100 chance at recovering that onside kick. I'd rather see the chance a little bit more. You know, before they changed the rules to where you can't overload one side, it was a 21% clip that you could recover it at. 20% versus 6 or 20% versus 5 is a huge drop-off. So I'm for this. I don't know if it's going to pass. I have no idea if there's enough appetite for this. But I just think, actually having watched it in action as well over the last two summers or springs with the AAF and the XFL, neither one lasted to the summer, I thought it worked. I thought it was cool. I thought it was yes, it is a quote-unquote gimmick. But, I mean, the fact is they're going to have to figure out ways to replace the kickoff. I wish it wasn't the case because the kickoff is one of the most exciting plays in football, but they're already doing it. I mean, if 95% of your kicks go out of the back of the end zone anyway, why do we even have the kickoff? Just put it at the 25 then. And if the onside kick is going to be recovered 5% of the time, then switch to a 4th-and-15. You want to make it a 4th-and-20? That's fine by me, but I would at least rather see something that is somewhat defensible or somewhat attainable, rather, than just have an onside kick that you know is not going to go anywhere and it's not going to change the outcome of the game. I mean, I don't know. Recently, I rewatched the 1993 wild card game, the Frank Reich game, Oilers and Bills, and that's one of the great games in NFL history. It's a comeback. We love comebacks. Why not enhance the possibility for a comeback with the 4th-and-15 play? Thanks to executive producer Sean Mraz here on the DA Show today. Thanks to Ryan Hickey as well, associate producer and On the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Chris Lopresti on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow morning beginning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Remember, tomorrow's Memorial Day, so keep those that we have lost and their families in your thoughts tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.